In the night, Nomanor felt the villip move against his chest, signaling an incoming communication. He lay quietly, wondering if he could leave the rock shelter unobserved. The Jedi slept lightly, and so did Harar. Besides, despite the fact that they hadn't seen any animals more dangerous than a Dilith, the older Jedi insisted on keeping watches, and Tahiri was on watch at the moment. His own shift would begin in a few hours. Why couldn't the signal have come then? Cursing silently, he lay there until the villip ceased quivering, but did not sleep again. When at last his watch arrived, and he took Tahiri's place on the outjut above the cave, he still dared not reply to the other end of the connection until enough time had passed that he could be relatively certain she was asleep. Finally, more than an hour after he took the post, he climbed a little higher up the hill to be certain he was out of earshot of anyone who might be awake, and once again unsealed the bag and stroked the creature to life. For long moments, nothing happened, but then a face appeared, a hideous, distorted face. With a faint shock, he realized it was Shimra's jester, Anami.
Nomanor, the jester burbled. Nomanor, your reputation we deplore, the bumbling failed executor.
I must speak with Shimra, Nomanor whispered fiercely. Quickly, before our enemies discover us.
Nomanor,
the villip growled, unable to actually convey the profound, bone-shivering bass of Shimra's voice, but suggesting it well enough.
Most unworthy and perverse of my servants, what could you possibly want?
Only to serve you, Lord.
You would have served me best to have given yourself over to sacrifice after the disaster you caused on Ebak Nine.
I could not, great lord, he said. I was captured by the Jedi. I have been their captive since that time.
Indeed, it was very considerate of them to allow you the use of a villip.
I secreted it upon my person. It went undiscovered.
Then why did you not use it earlier?
The Supreme Overlord rumbled. I was observed, always observed. But I have won their confidence now.
Enough!
Shimra snapped.
You mention Zonama Sikot. That world has been destroyed.
It has not, Dreadlord. I am upon it, along with the Shaper Nen-Yim and the priest Harar. They have allied with the Jedi, Lord Shimra. Against you. Against us.
Harar, you would have me take your word that Harar is a traitor?
Summon him, my lord. You will find him absent from Yuuzhan'tar, and indeed from Yuuzhan'vong space, as is Nen-Yim. For an interminable period, Shimra said nothing.
Go on,
he finally said. With me are also two Jedi, Koran Horn, who slew Shidao Shai, and Tahiri, the one who was shaped. He took a deep breath. Lord, Luke Skywalker is also here, the chief of them all, and Mara Jade Skywalker.
On Zonama Sikot.
The Supreme Overlord's tone carried an almost unimaginable tinge of fear. Yes, Dread Lord. They have come to persuade the planet to join them against us.
You know how to reach this planet?
My villip can be made to serve as a tracer. You may use Fa'anor's villip to find me. A shaper can make the necessary modifications.
Lead me to Zonama Sikot, Nomanor, and you will find the gods smile on you again. I will smile on you again.
That is my only wish, Dreadlord, to serve you as I once did.
I should hope you will serve me better.
Shimra paused.
Based on our past experiences, it will require overwhelming force to destroy this cursed planet. Much of our fleet is presently engaged. Indeed, I consider it possible, Nomanor, that you may yet be a traitor trying to lure my fleet there so the infidels can take Yuuzhan'tar.
No fleet is necessary, Dread Lord. There is an Imperial frigate above this planet, and doubtless Skywalker has a ship. Send one ship to deal with them, and a landing craft to find me. That is all that is required.
Fool,
Shimra grunted.
The problem is not with infidel ships, but with the planet itself.
The planet will not present a problem, Lord Shimra. I have the means to sabotage it. By the time your ships arrive here, it shall be occupied with its own death.
Nothing, Corrin grumbled, folding down to rest on a log. I must have looked for 10 kilometers in every direction, and there's no sign of natives. Maybe there aren't that many, Tahiri said, reaching up to pick an oblong fruit with a serrated corona of leaf at the top. They had dubbed it a ping pear, and it was one of the 8 fruits that Nin Yim had identified as edible and nutritious.
Or maybe we had the misfortune to crash in the one uninhabited region they have left, Corrin said.
That doesn't matter. We can't stay here forever. I've been trying to think of a way to attract the attention of that Imperial frigate, if nothing else.
Any thoughts on how to go about that?
He nodded.
Yes. I'll have to go to the one place I've been avoiding.
Oh, the giant hyperdrive.
Right.
Which you don't want the Yuuzhan'vong to know is a giant hyperdrive because you're afraid it will disillusion them somehow.
You get 2 marks, Corrin said.
How far away do you think it is?
I eyeball it at about 20 clicks.
Yeah, that's what I figured too, Tahiri said. So when do we start?
We don't, Corrin replied.
Harar will go with me. I need you to stay and look after the other 2.
Again? I'm sick of babysitting. Don't you trust them yet? They're completely moon-eyed over this place, both of them. Harar is the one we ought to worry about.
I do worry about Harar. That's why I'm keeping an eye on him. But the other 2... They're still the enemy, Tahiri.
Yes, sir, Tahiri replied, unenthusiastically.
So Harar and I will start in the morning, Corrin went on. It shouldn't take us more than a day or a day and a half of walking to make it there. But I can't say how long it will be before I figure out if there's anything useful there. Maybe an hour, maybe days. I need you to stay alert here.
For what? Vicious fruit? Corrin looked up, his eyes sharp.
I don't know, he said. I've got a bad feeling about this whole deal. But there's nothing I can do about it until I have some way to contact Luke.
If he's still here.
I think he is. I get occasional glimpses.
So do I, Tahiri said. Especially of Jason. But the Force doesn't care how far away they are. They could be back on Mon Calamari.
That's not how it feels, Corrin said. You're going to have to trust I've learned a thing or 2 over the years.
The angry tone startled her. Corrin, I know you're a more experienced Jedi than I am.
Not the impression you give.
I'm sorry if I... The knot, growing since she had first seen him again, exploded. She felt warmth on her face and realized to her utter shame that she was crying. Sometimes I don't express myself very well, I think, she said. I mean... I've just integrated 2 personalities. I don't have this all worked out yet.
Hey, easy, Corrin murmured. I misunderstood you, that's all.
No, no, Corrin, you're my hero.
Look, Tahiri,
I need more training, she blurted out. Special training. Can't you see that? Why haven't you ever offered? I mean, you know so much more than I do. She trailed off. Both horrified and relieved that she had finally said something.
I'm not a master, Tahiri, Corrin said gently. There are masters who would be happy to train you.
You have half a chance of understanding me, Tahiri said. They don't.
I think you're selling them short.
Maybe. She thrust her chin out defiantly. Does that mean you don't want me?
No,
Corrin said. But it's not that simple. We'd have to ask Master Skywalker. And at the least, it means that if you're going to be my apprentice, you'll have to stop talking back and do what I say. Do you understand that?
You mean you'll take me on?
Provisionally, since there are no masters around, and until I get Luke's yes or no on the matter. If you agree to those conditions. She wiped her eyes with the back of her hand.
I agree then.
Good. Then you stay here with Nanyim and the Prophet. The end.
Okay.
Nanyim examined the thing she had grown. It was, to all appearances, a Kosa. The differences between it and the usual item were invisible to the naked eye. She reached for it, but the faint sound of approaching footsteps gave her pause. It was the shaped Jedi, of course. She was never far from Nanyim, always watching.
Hello,
the shaper said. You seem in a good mood, Tahiri replied. The corners of Nanyim's mouth turned up.
That may change in a moment. I'm about to try something new. It will probably fail.
Tahiri turned a curious eye toward the experiment.
What is it exactly?
It looks like a Kosa.
It is, so far as it goes. But I grew it with modifications.
The Jedi sat cross-legged near her.
What sort of modifications? Your talk of the Force binding the life of this world and serving as its means of intercommunication interested me. And yet, since Yuuzhan Vong life does not appear in the Force, I could think of no way to test that possibility. However, it occurred to me that if the ecosystem of this world is truly self-regulating, it must have some sort of memory. It needs to know what happened yesterday and last cycle to plan for tomorrow. Furthermore, that memory must be shared somehow by all of its constituents.
I'm with you so far. Nanyim indicated a 10-legged arthropod she had enclosed in a nurturing membrane.
Even if the memory was stored at a molecular level, a creature this size could not possibly carry enough to be useful. So I reason the planet's central memory core lies elsewhere, but that any living thing, even a cell, must be able to contact it. Perhaps through this force of yours.
Interesting. And you found a way to test that?
I think so.
She glanced up at the young Jedi.
To explain, I may have to speak of things that will upset you.
Tahiri's eyes narrowed.
This concerns my own shaping, doesn't it? Yes. Go on. There is a protocol, the Protocol of Ka, which is used to integrate manufactured or borrowed memories into the brain tissue of Yuuzhan Vong life. We use it often, mostly for rather mundane purposes. Teaching ships to fly, for instance. But we also use it at times to enhance our own memories, to gain skills or knowledge without having to learn them. In the past, on rare occasions, we've used the protocol to replace entire personalities.
Which is what you tried to do to me.
Exactly. But the Protocol of Ka did not work on your human tissues, naturally. Yuuzhan Vong and human tissue are not sufficiently compatible for that. So instead, we used your own brain cells to create a sort of human Ka cell, but filled with Yuuzhan Vong information. It was a hybrid cell.
And that worked, Tahiri said.
Correct, Nanyim said. In terms of your brain tissue, you are quite literally half Yuuzhan Vong. We did not implant merely memories, but also the cells that carried them.
Tahiri's eyes narrowed. Nanyim had learned that was a sign of danger.
I need to know, was there a real Reina?
Nanyim blinked.
What an interesting question.
But of course she would be curious about that.
I'm sure there must have been, she said. The name was probably changed. Names are easy to change. but the details of your childhood undoubtedly came from a real person. Such memories might be generated, I suppose, but there would be no reason to, when they could be donated by any living Yuuzhan Vong. Is she dead? I've no idea. Mi Zhan Quad supplied the memory data. Only she could know who the donor was. And of course, she's in no position to tell you. Her tendrils curled with curiosity. Did it truly work? You remember being in a creche and so on?
Tahiri nodded. Some things like crystal, others muddier.
I remember once my creche mates, Pelo and Jules, we took one of the scrubbing corks and put it in the communal food area. It ate all of the iffy, Nenyim finished, feeling a strange twisting in her.
Yes, Tahiri said. She frowned.
How did you know? Do you remember an incident involving a damaged fighting Namek?
Wait, you mean those lizard bird things the warriors used to fight against each other?
I found one once. One of the warriors had abandoned it in the Grand Vivarium because it wouldn't fight. It was injured, and I nursed it back to health.
The chill deepened.
What's wrong? Tahiri asked. Nenyim sighed. Those are my memories.
Tahiri stared at her for a long moment without speaking, as if trying to see through her skin.
You were telling me about the Khoisa.
Nenyim nodded, happy to return to a subject she could get a grip on.
I extracted nerve cells from Sikoten life and modified them as your cells were modified. It was an easier task because Sikoten life is genetically similar to our own. I hoped through them to gain access to the memories of this world, as I might access a Khoisa.
May I watch?
I would be honored.
Nenyim hesitated no longer, but reached for the Khoisa and joined with it. For an instant, there was nothing, and then the world seemed to shatter. Images and data roared through her mind. Stars and vacuum, the feel of life on her skin, the tear of wind across her polar regions. Feelings, fear, pain, despair, joy, all on a scale that dwarfed the tiny Yuuzhan Vong brain trying to interpret it. The images came faster, running together, burning in her, casting light into every corner of her brain. It was something like trying to access the eighth cortex, but both less painful and, she understood, more dangerous. Her thoughts were disintegrating under the onslaught. Nenyim was vanishing. Something else was hollowing her out. A god was eating her from the inside. Nenyim clasped the Khoisa, and a look of vast surprise twisted her features. Then her body jerked strangely, and she fell over, convulsing, the Khoisa still gripped between her fingers. Nenyim! Tahiri cried, starting forward. Carefully, she reached out in the force. Nenyim herself was a blank slate, as usual, but in the Khoisa, something was happening. It was buzzing and humming with power. Tahiri could feel the flow of it from all around her, a million voices speaking at once. Black blood began to dribble from Nenyim's nostrils.
Okay, she thought, I have to do something.
Breaking Nenyim's bond with the Khoisa couldn't make things worse. It was already killing her. She reached for the Khoisa, hoping the force would guide her. When she touched it, a world struck her down. Suddenly, the stream of sight and smell and tactile data slowed and distilled. The noise dropped away, and Nenyim found herself in the middle of a quiet moment, a totality rather than a sequence. She found herself understanding, and she knew the secret of Zonama Sikot. She felt like laughing and crying at once. When Tahiri came to, Nenyim was daubing her forehead with some sort of damp tissue.
What happened?
she mumbled through a tongue that felt like a bloated grishworm. Her head hurt. Her whole body hurt.
I'm not certain, the shaper admitted. When I ceased contact with... When it was over, I found you unconscious.
So you made contact with Zonama Seacott?
Not with the living consciousness, no, she said. I think you are correct. One must have some connection to the Force for that. But the memories alone nearly overwhelmed me.
She stood.
I must beg your indulgence. I must meditate now. But I believe I have the solution.
To what? Nen Yim felt her mouth pull in an unaccustomed smile.
Everything that concerns us, she said.
Gnome Anor drew himself quietly deeper into the forest above the cave. Neither of the females had noticed him. From his angle, he couldn't see them, but he'd heard most of their conversation. If only he'd understood more of it. What did Nen Yim mean when she said that she had learned the secret of Zonama Seacott? As he watched, the shaper walked into view, carrying her kosa, and then out of view again, into the deep boles of the bottomland. Tahiri did not appear, apparently respecting Nen Yim's desire for solitude. After a moment, Gnome Anor slipped up the ridge, traveled 50 meters or so in the direction he believed Nen Yim had gone, and then descended the hill after her. Nen Yim gazed at the trees around her, immersed herself in the lisping of wind through their leaves, and the insistent purr of insects and chatter of animals. She felt something tighten her relax, release her inhibitions and prejudices, and saw the living world at last as alive. Finally, she felt herself as alive. But now she felt in the center, as everything was its own center, and she was happy.
It's what we always should have been, she murmured to herself. Zonama Seacott. Is...
Am I interrupting you?
She shook herself from her reverie and then smiled. It was the prophet.
You have discovered something, the prophet said.
Something wonderful, Nen Yim replied. I'm eager to share it with all of you.
Is it about our redemption? He asked.
To her surprise, she thought he sounded mildly sarcastic.
It is, she assured him, and not merely for the shamed ones, but for all of us. But it will not be easy. Shimra will resist the truth.
You're beginning to sound like me, the prophet said.
I suppose I am, she replied. But when you know the truth...
Truth is an entirely relative thing, the prophet said,
stepping a little closer. He reached toward his face.
Why are you removing your masker?
If this is the day of revelation, let us all stand before Zonama Seacott as we truly are. But you've interrupted me. I was speaking of truth. My truths, for instance, were all carefully crafted lies.
His voice had harshened as the masker unpeeled from his face.
What?
She asked. But then the masker dropped away to reveal not the face of a shamed one, but the perfectly normal face of an executor. Except that one of his eyes... She gasped and flung up her shaper's hand. In an instant, the whip sting hissed from her finger toward the face. But he was faster, much faster, bringing his arm up so that the sting drilled through it. He gasped, snarled, and quickly rotated his arm, wrapping the whip sting around it so she could not withdraw for another strike. Then he set his feet and yanked her toward him. She saw the pupil of his eye dilate impossibly wide, and then it spit at her.
Plyrin Bowl, she had time to think, before the poison struck her.
Her muscles contracted instantly, and she felt her heartbeat roaring in her ears as she thudded to the ground in what seemed like slow motion. Her body flopped until she was on her back, and she found the executor standing over her. She could no longer make out the features of his face.
But, Zonama Seacott, the answer...
I really couldn't care less, the false prophet said. You've gone mad, you and Harar. Whatever future you would launch from here, I don't think it would be one I care for. There is only so much a people can change before they lose themselves.
Already lost.
She needed to make him understand. The Yuuzhan Vong had lost their way long before coming to this galaxy. He reached down for something and picked it up. A rock.
You'll have to excuse me if I'm humble enough to doubt that a poison of my manufacture will kill you, Nenyim. You truly are a genius. You are a terrible loss to our people.
He came toward her, hefting the rock in one hand. He swung the rock down, and something thundered, and one side of her head felt huge. The second blow seemed softer. She saw again the rush of images that Zonama Seacott had shown her. The beauty of a world in harmony. A harmony so sublime that the Yuuzhan Vong had no word for it. Though once, they must have.
No Manor hit her a third time and fell back. Ignoring his oozing wounds, he reached down and picked up the Kossa, examining it with a critical eye. Was this her original Kossa, or the thing she had used to contact the memories of Zonama Seacott? He fervently hoped it was the former, and that she had brought it along to record her new discovery. He faced out toward the gigantic hyperdrive guides. He still had challenges ahead. There were still Corrin and Harar to deal with, and Tahiri would surely come after him. And he had little time. In less than a day cycle, the ships sent by Shimra would be here. By that time, Zonama Seacott had to be dead, or at the very least, crippled. He intended to see it done. When sundown drew near and Nenyim hadn't returned, Tahiri went looking for her. She went in the general direction the Shaper had taken. Above her, clouds were gathering, and the tall Boras creaked in a quickening wind. She found Nenyim in a small clearing. A trail of blood showed that she'd crawled a few meters before collapsing. As Tahiri knelt beside her, she saw the Shaper's head was a messy ruin.
Nenyim, Tahiri said gently. Who did this? Prophet. He's not.
She quivered at the effort of saying the words.
Nomanor.
Nomanor? She looked quickly around, her hand grasping for her lightsaber. Nenyim shivered and gasped.
I have a med pack back at the camp, Tahiri said. Just hang on and I'll be back. No. I've stayed too long already. I can't. He thought I was dead. He's going to kill Seacott. You have to stop him.
Kill Seacott?
Has my Kossa. I brought protocols in case Seacott was a danger to us.
Where's he gone?
He will seek. Drive mechanism. The centaur that controls it can be sabotaged to make the drive fail cataclysmically. Probably made thing drive, if the ship is an example. Stop him.
Nenyim gasped and her body seized.
Wanted to tell you about Seacott. It's what?
But that was the last thing she said. Her mouth kept working for a time, but no words came out. A few moments later, her pulse was gone. Corrin stood gazing up at the immense metal veins, trying to imagine the engineering job that had produced them. Now that they were near, he could see more of the engines, three vast pits that must be the exhaust vents of ion or even fusion drives.
You know what these are, don't you?
Harar said in an accusatory tone.
They look like made things.
Yes,
These are part of a hyperdrive engine.
A hyper? The planet can be moved?
It has been moved. It took the Jedi quite some time to find it because it had left the system where it was last recorded.
I see now why you avoided bringing me here, Harar said. We move planets, but we use Dovin Basals. There is no... how would you say it? Pushback?
Counter-reaction, Corin said.
Yes. How can a planet stand the stress of the sort of engines you use?
Not without cost, I would think. A sudden thought occurred to him. Nen-Yim mentioned recent mass extinctions. Using this engine may have been the cause of them.
What was your reason for coming to this place if you already knew what this was?
I'm looking for a communications device, so I can contact the Faroans or the ship in orbit. Otherwise, we could be stuck here for a very long time. Harar searched about with his gaze.
Where do we look for this communications device of yours?
I don't know. I figure there must be some sort of maintenance access to the hyperdrive core. I'm hoping we'll find something or someone there. If not, I'm fresh out of ideas. They found that access with relatively little trouble. A large metallic dome was half buried in rock about 20 meters from the northernmost tower. Corin could see that the top was built to open so that large parts and equipment could be shuttled in and out. A more modest, ground-level entrance wouldn't open for them, but Corin was able to solve that little problem after a few minutes with his lightsaber. Within, they found an enormous shaft plunging straight down toward the planet's core. Faint track lights illuminated the floor as they entered.
The maintenance area will be down there, Corin said, gesturing down the shaft. This could take a while, if it's as big as it looks.
Noma Nor watched the entrance to the huge hyperdrive for a long while before starting down. It was clear that the Jedi and Harar had gained entrance using the Jedi's weapon. What wasn't clear was where they were exactly and what they were doing. He entered and listened carefully, but heard only the wretched hum of machinery. He'd replaced the masker on his face. If he met them, he would simply say he had followed out of curiosity. So determined, he entered the building and began searching for a way down, where logic dictated he might find what he sought. He found a series of lifts not very different from those he had encountered on a dozen infidel worlds. He stepped in, found the control that would send it down, and reached for it. At that moment, he heard another lift arrive, coming up from below. The door to his lift closed just as the other opened, and he heard the voices of Harar and Corin. He quickly stabbed his finger at the control to pause his descent.
I might be able to piece something together with this stuff, Corin was saying, but it will take a while.
Perhaps we should fire the engines, Harar said. That should get their attention.
When the voices had faded beyond hearing, he touched the descent control, and the lift began to whirr down its shaft. It took what seemed a long time, so long that the air actually seemed to get thicker. He was beginning to wonder if he would simply continue on to the other side of the planet when the car finally arrived in an immense room. Banks of machines and control panels gleamed in the faint light from the floor. He called all the lifts down, wedged them open with some crates he found stacked nearby, and began his search. He had very little technical knowledge concerning hyperdrive cores, but he didn't really need any. What he was looking for was an interface, something where the biosphere of Seacott met the cold metal of the infidel machines. He sat cross-legged on a console and took out Nen-Yim's Kosa, searching through it for the data on the Sakotan ship. There was a long entry on the engine moorings, the analog of which was certainly what he was looking for. The ship had been grown around a sort of neural net. The hyperdrive was probably connected to something similar. So where would that be? He suspected he had a long search ahead of him. Halfway back to the camp, Corin heard a rustling in the underbrush and saw Tahiri moving at a fast trot. She had her lightsaber in her hand, and he could sense her anger like a torch in the high wind.
Tahiri, he called. What's happened?
Nen Yim is dead, she said, her voice as heavy and flat as a sheet of duracrete. The prophet killed her.
The prophet?
Harar asked.
Are you certain?
She turned on Harar, almost as if she meant to attack him.
She told me so herself, before she died, she snapped. He'd done a pretty good job on her head with a rock,
but she managed to tell me that he's planning on killing Seacott. He listened carefully as Tahiri went through the story. Telling it again did not seem to calm her down.
But the prophet believes this planet is the salvation of his followers, Corin said. Why would he want to destroy it?
Because he isn't the prophet, Tahiri replied. He's Nomanor. Harar closed his eyes and ground his knuckles into his forehead.
Nomanor, he muttered. Of course!
Corin certainly knew who Nomanor was, and not just by reputation. The Executor had very nearly killed him, and Tahiri, and Anakin, in the Yagdul system.
He fooled us all, Corin said. The question is, why would he want to destroy Seacott? To win back Shimra's good graces,
Harar snarled.
But he'll be stuck here with the rest of us, Corin said,
then immediately felt stupid.
They're coming after him, aren't they? The lump under his arm, Harar said. If that was no Manor, it was no disfigurement. It must have been a Vilip.
Which means we have to find him fast.
He might have easily slipped past us, Harar said, while we were searching for a communications device. You're right. We'd better go back.
It was beginning to rain as they swept the area around the vanes and then entered the repair complex, lightsabers ready. They didn't find anyone at the entry level, but they did find the turbo lifts jammed.
He's down there, Corin said.
Well, we can't wait for him to come back up, Tahiri said. By then it'll be too late. Corin peered down the shaft.
There ought to be a manual way down, in case the power cuts out, but I don't see anything.
They probably use some sort of flitter or hover lift, Tahiri pointed out. That's too far down to go by ladder.
Yes, it is, Corin said, eyes still searching. But I think I do see a way. It's just not one I like.
To Nomanor's delight, the search was not nearly so long as he feared it would be. In fact, the object of his search was so large and obvious that he overlooked it at first. In the center of the chamber was a knob about twice as tall as he was and about the same in diameter. At first glance, it seemed to be wrapped in some sort of rough fabric, but a closer inspection showed that it was heavily wound in very fine threads. At the base of the thing, the threads spread out like fine roots and dug into the damp, exposed stone of the floor. He quickly unpacked the incubator, a wet, fleshy device about the size of his hand. He linked it to the CASA and accessed a protocol that was both a genetic and developmental blueprint. A stream of chemical and telepathic data moved from the CASA to the incubator. The latter quivered and began to vibrate ever so slightly. Nomanor allowed himself a smile. The incubator was already transforming genetic blueprints into living organisms. The result would be a soldier virus that would invade the neural integuments and corrupt their ability to carry data. The result should be a feedback explosion in the core. He had only to hide the incubator and leave. He pushed experimentally at the filaments. They were too tough to break, but they pushed readily aside so that he was able to bury the organism deep within. When he was done, the filaments slowly returned to their places, leaving no sign of what he had done. He removed his disguise, produced his vilip, and stroked it. A moment later, the fierce visage of a warrior appeared.
I am Ushk Chokar,
the vilip informed him.
You are the one I have come for.
Yes, Nomanor replied. What is your present position?
In high orbit around the planet your signal emanates from, we seem to be undetected.
Send a lander for me, Nomanor said. You may follow the Vilip signal.
Yes, I have your position. The lander will be there in 7 hours.
You're looking at that superconducting cable, aren't you? Tahiri said.
Yes.
The cable was smooth and just small enough that his hands could fit around it. It looked like it went all the way down and hung 10 centimeters away from the wall. I'm game, Tahiri said.
Corin shook his head.
No, if Anor hears me coming down, he'll just come back up in a turbo lift. You have to be here in case he does that. Harar doesn't have any weapons.
Corin took his jacket off. Outside, a steady pounding began as the rain came. Thunder crashed nearby. He reached out and touched the cable experimentally, then wrapped the jacket around it, getting a firm grip. He swung himself over the guardrail and reaffirmed the grip.
Just watch those lifts, Corin reminded her. Then he let his body slide out into the air. For the first few seconds, he was in true freefall, accelerating toward the bottom of the shaft at the exponential speed of gravity. Then he began to tighten his grip, creating friction against the cable. He had a long way to go, and proceeding like this, he wasn't going to make it. His arms would wear out long before he reached the bottom, or more likely, the jacket would burn through. He closed his eyes, feeling the air rush past, feeling the living force around him, the great pulsing life of Seacott, the unseen floor, his own body, all one in the force, and relaxed. He kept his hands loosely around the cable, but put no pressure on it. He was really falling now, his body tending horizontal as the atmosphere pushed against it. Of course, he'd always had a little trouble with levitation, which was why he had to get the moment exactly right, and he had to trust the force to let him know when it was. It came. He clamped down on the jacket, and his arms felt like they were coming out of their sockets. The smell of scorched synth leather filled his nostrils, and he felt the floor coming up, still too fast. He pushed in the force, and slammed into the ground. He let his knees buckle, released the jacket, and rolled.
Ouch, he murmured.
Nomanor heard something strike the floor not too far away, and without even having to look, he knew the Jedi had somehow found a way to come down the shaft after him. He cursed under his breath and ran for the lift. The lift came in sight, but he heard running footfalls behind him. He lurched to a stop in front of the car, pushed out the crate that was blocking it, and punched at the ascent control. Only then did he look up to see how close his pursuer was. Corin Horn was just rounding a bank of equipment, his lightsaber blazing. He was coming fast, but not fast enough. The lift started up. Now he had a few seconds to think. Horn would unjam a lift and follow him, but he hadn't seen Tahiri. She was probably still at the top, waiting for the lift door to open. Maybe Harar was with her. Could he take them both? He spent the next few seconds marshaling his strength, knowing this would either be his moment of triumph or another failure. The door opened and Nomanor stepped out, smiling, his hands extended with open palms. Stop right there, Tahiri commanded.
If I don't, will you cut me down? Nomanor asked. I have no weapons.
Kill him,
Harar said. He's not armed, Tahiri said. I won't murder him.
No!
Harar said, leaping forward. It distracted Tahiri for an instant, and she looked away, noticing even as she did that one of Anor's pupils was growing. Memory clicked, something Leia had said about that eye. She leapt aside as the glob of venom spurted toward her, but she hadn't taken the guardrail into account. She hit it with her hip, and agonizing pain jolted up her side. She tried to turn, and managed to just in time, to see Nomanor sidestep the priest and kick viciously at her. The kick connected, flipping her back. She dropped her lightsaber, grabbing wildly for the railing. She missed, and then she was falling. Part of Nomanor was amazed it had been so easy to deal with Tahiri. He turned on Harar and found the priest coming for him again, a snarl on his face. Nomanor hit him with a Ku'ur kick.
then spun and snapped his fist against the back of the priest's head. Harar faded with the blow, however, dropping and sweeping. He caught one of Nomanor's feet, putting him off balance long enough to launch a powerful thrusting punch. More by luck than from any design on Nomanor's part, the punch missed. Nomanor brought his fist up under Harar's jaw with such force that the priest left the ground. Bits of shattered teeth sprinkled the floor as Harar thudded to it, slid up to the wall, and lay still. Nomanor took quick stock of his situation and saw that his day was getting even better. The Jedi had dropped her weapon. Quickly, he picked it up. He had experimented with them before, and so found it easy to ignite. Then, remembering Horn, he severed the power conduits to the lifts, starting with the one in motion. He heard it drag to a stop someplace not far below. Tahiri flailed in space, reaching desperately to grab something, anything, but nothing was in reach. From the corner of her vision, she caught sight of the cable Corrin had slid down less than a meter away, which was still half a meter too far. She reached out, tugging at the cable with the force, changing her vector so she angled toward it. She wrapped her bare palms around it, gasping as her hands burned. She embraced the pain and focused beyond it, using the force to further slow her descent. Finally, every muscle in her body shrieking in chorus with her palms, she came to a stop. She looked up and discovered she had fallen almost 100 meters. She felt blisters rupturing on her hands. At least it makes them stickier, she reflected. Her hands conformed to the cable now, as if they were made of talgum. Nomanor went carefully up the narrow path, choosing his steps in the freeze-frame moments that the lightning created as it limned the world white and blue, then left it again in darkness. The rain was a steady drum, and the wind gusted like the laughter of an insane god. He crossed the narrow area and stepped over a gap in the next lightning flash, and saw that the way widened a bit ahead. But from the corner of his eye, someone crashed into him, chopping viciously at the side of his neck. The force of the blow knocked him sprawling, and his chin grated against stone. Lightning ripped the sky, and he made out Harar's face, terrifying, as if the very gods had put their light of vengeance in him.
Nomanor! The priest shouted through the rain. Prepare to die, perfidious one!
Nomanor felt the lightsaber in his hand. He dared not use the Plyren bowl. Even if it still contained poison, the rain would at best deflect it, at worst, wash it onto him. The Jedi weapon was his only chance. Nomanor pressed the stud on the lightsaber, and the cutting beam blazed out, hissing and trailing steam in the downpour. It felt strange, a weapon with no weight other than its grip. He cut at the priest's knee, but his position and the unfamiliar blade made the cut awkward. At the appearance of the blade, however, Harar tried to stop his forward motion and jerked his leg away from the attack. He slipped on the wet rocks and stumbled, falling past Nomanor and over the cliff. His howl of rage and frustration was quickly cut short. When the turbo lift jarred to a halt, Corrin ignited his lightsaber and cut through the roof of the car, stepping aside as the circle of metal clanged to the floor. After waiting a few seconds for the plating to cool, he leapt up and caught the edge of the hole, then drew himself up into the shaft. In the dim emergency lighting, he could see the door some 10 meters above. The lift was magnetic, so the walls were glassy smooth, and the power cables were buried in them. There were no rungs and nothing to give purchase. He dropped back down into the car and examined the control panel. Nomanor must have cut the power from above somehow, but the car hadn't fallen. Presumably, there was an emergency battery system to prevent that happening. But would the emergency system be able to finish the ascent, or was it doing its best just to keep him from falling? He pushed a red button with two vertical lines and a triangle, with no result. He tried a few of the others, again with no result.
Frustrated, he tapped the up key. The car started moving, though much more slowly than before. A few minutes later, he emerged from the lift, ready to fight, but there was no one to fight. The room was empty. He was about to go outside when he heard a faint noise behind him in the maintenance shaft. Peering over, he saw Tahiri pulling herself up the superconductor cable about 20 meters below.
"Are you okay?" he shouted.
"I'm fine," she called back up, her voice shaking. She seemed to be having trouble climbing. He went back to the lifts. Someone had indeed cut through the power couplings, with a lightsaber, it appeared. He reached cautiously inside and grabbed a rope-sized fiber-optic conduit and began to pull it out. When he thought he had enough, he cut it with his weapon and then tied a loop in the end. He threw the loop end down to Tahiri.
"Put your foot in that," he said, "and hang on with your hands. I'll pull you up."
She nodded wearily and did as instructed. When she had pulled herself over the rail, he saw her hands.
"Let me see those," he said.
"They're all right," she protested.
"What happened here?"
"I let my guard down," she said. "Nomanor has something in one of his eyes that shoots poison."
"Did he hit you with it?"
"No, but when I dodged, I hit the rail and then he knocked me over it."
"And Harar?"
"I don't know. He attacked Nomanor, I think. Maybe he's gone after him, which is what we ought to do."
Corin produced a small glow rod, and in its light, they found muddy, water-filled footprints leading back toward the heights. They followed the prints until they came to a narrow ridge of stone.
"At least there's only one way to go," Corin said.
The ridge continued until it joined a larger one, ascending the whole time.
"He's going for high ground," Corin said. "Can you sense your lightsaber?"
"No," she said. "There's something interfering, more than usual."
"I feel it too," Corin said. "It's Zonama Sikat. Something's wrong."
"We failed," Tahiri said. "Whatever Nomanor was going to do, he's already done it, I'm sure of it."
By the time the east was gray with dawn, they had reached a broad upland plateau that showed signs of recent convulsion. Far above, they heard a faint report, like very distant and brief lightning.
"Sonic boom," Corin murmured, searching the skies with his gaze.
"There," Tahiri said. She pointed to a swiftly moving spot high above.
"Good eyes," Corin told her. "I'll give you one guess where that's going."
"Wherever Nomanor is."
The dot was descending rapidly toward the plateau. Corin peered along its projected path and caught a hint of motion near a copse of low trees.
"Come on," Corin said. "If we run, we might get there in time."
Nomanor was watching the ship approach when the ground beneath his feet suddenly shuddered. It lasted for only an instant, but he knew it was only the beginning. The grass off to his left rustled, and from the corner of his eye, Nomanor glimpsed unnatural color. Turning as if in a dream, he beheld Corin Horn stepping into the clearing, his eyes full of death. Nomanor glanced up at the approaching ship. It was only moments away, but that was longer than it would take for the Jedi to kill him. He touched his hand to the stolen lightsaber and ran into the low sprawling copse of trees behind him. He need only buy enough time for Choka's ship to land and dispatch warriors. Corin Horn shouted and ran after him. Nomanor dodged through the trees, leaping an old fissure, then bore to his left, hoping to circle back to the clearing. He glanced back over his shoulder, saw Horn gaining on him, turned to redouble his pace. Just in time to see the blade of a foot level with his eyes. Behind the foot was an airborne Tahiri, her body horizontal to the ground. The kick caught him above the nostrils, snapping his head back and knocking him completely off his feet. He crashed into the trunk of a tree, and half of the wind blew out of him. He clawed for the Jedi weapon he'd thrust in his sash, but it was missing. In fact, it was in Tahiri's hands, the energy blade already on.
This is mine, she said. Corrin had come up behind her.
Don't kill him,
the older Jedi said.
I won't,
Tahir replied. I'm going to cut off his feet, though, she continued, stepping nearer. And then his hands, unless he tells us how to stop what he's done to Seacott.
Do what you will,
Nomanor said, forcing as much contempt into his voice as he could.
It has already begun. You cannot stop it.
Then, Zonama Seacott tried to throw them all into space. The ground bucked beneath them, and an anguished cry exploded in the Force, filling Tahiri's head with such agony that she hardly noticed when she thudded back to the ground. Through her blurred vision, she saw Nomanor up again, running off through the crazily tilted trees. Corrin was up, leaning heavily against the tree.
Corrin!
The two Jedi stumbled through the newly broken terrain. The ship was on the ground, and Nomanor was running toward it. Tahiri ran as she never had before, drawing on the turbulent force around them. Corrin was just ahead of her. Without warning, Corrin lashed out at her, sending her sprawling. Even before a sense of betrayal could register, she saw he was going down too. Less than a heartbeat later, a swarm of thudbugs whirred through the space where they'd just been. The warriors had already come out of the ship and hidden themselves around the clearing. Corrin and she were completely surrounded.
Remember, you're supposed to be training me, Tahiri commented as she and Corrin moved to stand back to back. What does the wise Jedi do in a situation like this?
The warriors were advancing toward them in a tightening circle. In the distance, near where the top of the field guides could be seen, the sky was a mass of white vapor.
Quickly!
Nomanor shouted from near the ship.
There is little time!
The ground trembled again, and pain pulsed through the Force.
Pain and something else. Something familiar.
She hadn't had time to sort it out when a track of green laser fire ran through the warriors on their right flank, then their left, and suddenly, a gleaming spacecraft came into view. It dropped to hover a few meters off the ground.
Shade Shadow!
Corrin whooped.
It's Mara and Luke!
Even as he said it, the landing ramp dropped down, and Luke Skywalker and Jason Solo leapt out, followed by the hulking reptilian figure of Saba Sebatine. Three new lightsabers flared to life. Then the shadow leapt back up, turned, and began raining fire on the Yuuzhan Vong craft. The remaining warriors shook off their stupor and charged, but Tahiri ignored them, tearing through one of the gaps cut by the shadow. Nomanor wasn't watching her. Instead, he was dodging laser fire, trying to reach the landing ramp of the Yuuzhan Vong ship. He made it there only a few meters ahead of her, but as soon as he was on it, it began to retract. With a war cry, she hurled herself through the air, landing on the ramp, sweeping her lightsaber toward the Executor's head. Nomanor ducked at the last instant, and her lightsaber cut into the coral hull. He scrambled away from her, and she started to follow, but the ship suddenly bounded up from the ground, twisting as it went. Tahiri lost her footing and fell. She grasped at the edge of the retracting ramp and missed, but caught the edge of a plasma projector with her left hand. Furiously, she cut at the hull with her lightsaber. It resisted the blow, and her weight suddenly tripled as the ship went into drive. She lost her grip and went whirling back to the ground, landing so hard, all of the wind went out of her. She lay there, trying to recover it, watching helplessly as the Yorick coral vessel bored up through the atmosphere with Jade Shadow in hot pursuit. Another wrenching wave of pain from the planet lashed at her, and again the ground shifted. Wheezing, she forced herself to her feet. Corrin, Luke, and Jason were trotting toward her. Saba was standing at the edge of the clearing, staring out at the towers. The Yuuzhan Vong warriors all appeared to be dead.
Tahiri, Jason asked, are you okay? Nothing broken, I think, she said.
He wrapped her up in an embrace that hurt almost as much as it felt good. Tears threatened again.
I let him get away, she murmured. After all that, I let him get away. And now Seacott will die.
Die? Master Skywalker said. Do you two understand what's going on here? What's wrong with Seacott? Over Jason's shoulder, Tahiri saw a shaft of blue light suddenly leap from ground to sky, appearing from somewhere near the hyperdrive. It lasted only a second.
Down! Corrin shouted. Cover your ears!
A heartbeat later, the shockwave came, followed by a wind so hot it scorched her back.
What was that? Jason asked.
The ship's drive, Corrin explained. Nomanor must have sabotaged it somehow.
Nomanor? Master Skywalker said. What?
That's a long story, Corrin said. One that I would like to tell, but I don't think I'm going to get the chance if we don't get out of this area and quickly.
Mara's already on her way back, Master Skywalker said.
By the time the shadow dropped back low enough to pick them up, the surface of Zonama Seacott was vibrating like a plucked string. And in the Force, Tahiri could feel something building, something out of control. She followed the others aboard.
I came back when I saw the plasma burst, Mara said.
Is it a weapon?
No, Luke said. Get us out of here, Mara, fast.
Sounds good to me.
What about Nomanor? Tahiri asked.
I alerted Widowmaker, Mara said. They should have enough firepower to deal with the Vong ship.
The ground was dwindling, and the gigantic veins of the hyperdrive were coming into view. The entire valley they stood in was black, and as she watched, three brilliant blue beams, like the one they had seen a moment ago, tore up through the atmosphere. The shockwave hit, and the shadow went into a crazy yaw, which Mara fought, cursing into control.
I appreciate the save, Corrin told Master Skywalker as the ship leveled out. But how is it you just happened by?
We didn't know it was you, Luke said. Seacott was in pain. We came here to find out what was wrong and saw the Yuuzhan Vong ship. He raised an eyebrow.
We were pretty surprised to find you here.
Right, Corrin said.
That explanation I promised you?
Through the upward-angled cockpit view, Tahiri saw stars appearing as they left the atmosphere behind. Then, abruptly, they streaked away.
Nomanor was standing on the bridge of the transport vessel, Red Kurang, watching the planet recede with a grim smile of satisfaction. Jade Shadow had broken off her pursuit.
A large infidel ship is approaching, one of the subalterns growled.
It's the Imperial frigate I mentioned to Shimra, Nomanor said. You were supposed to occupy it with your other ships.
There are no other ships, Ushk Choka growled. Lord Shimra had need of them elsewhere.
He grimaced at the sight of the approaching ship.
It's too large to engage, he said. Can we outrun it?
We will have to bear its first assault,
the subaltern said.
After that, we can outrun. Its mass will prevent its changing its vector quickly enough to catch us before we burrow into dark space.
Can we withstand?
Ushchoka asked.
Possibly,
the subaltern said dubiously.
Maneuver evasively, then.
Nomanor was still watching the planet, feeling oddly calm, despite the danger he was in. He could still see where the hyperwave guides were by the boiling cloud, and as he watched, a brilliant blue cone suddenly appeared, then, just as quickly, vanished. Something was wrong. The core was supposed to explode, not fire the engines. Not one, but three blue cones stabbed up through the atmosphere. It was a beautiful sight. Suddenly, all the stars fell towards Zonama Seacott. The frigate quivered and twisted, stretched into a streak of light, and vanished with the stars. Nomanor snarled, braced himself, and the stars were back. In the distance, the orange gas giant rotated as always. Where Zonama Seacott had been was only empty space.
Not what I expected,
Nomanor thought, as his body went light from relief.
Not what I expected, but it will serve.
Still, for long moments, he gazed at where the planet had been, blinking away the blood, even though there was nothing to see. Tahiri looked up at the heavens and shivered straight to her bones. No world should have hyperspace for a sky. After the jump, the Jade Shadow's instruments had gone strange, and Mara had settled the ship in a protected ravine until they could sort things out. No telling what would happen to the atmosphere when they reverted. If they reverted. She drew her attention back to the conversation. Jason and I both sensed you for some time, Master Skywalker was saying. But fitfully, and we couldn't get a sense of where. Seacott sensed something too, but couldn't find your ship. It was hidden somehow. We came in a Sakotan ship, Tahiri said.
With a few Yuuzhan Vong spare parts, Corrin put in.
That might explain it, Luke said.
It certainly explains it,
a new voice said. They all turned, and Tahiri gasped. Nen Yim was standing there, whole, alive.
Nen Yim, she said.
Nen Yim shook her head sadly.
No, this one has passed on. I found her attached to my memory, her and much information concerning her technology and the ship that brought you here. The modifications she made to the ship are interesting. I may experiment with the design, should we survive this.
Tahiri, Jason said, this is Seacott, the living intelligence of the planet. What did one say to a world?
I'm pleased to meet you. And I you, Tahiri,
Seacott said gravely.
Should we survive? Luke asked. What happened exactly?
I was infected with a virus designed to corrupt the information transfer system that links my consciousness to the hyperdrive. I believe the intended result was a core explosion. I managed to prevent that, but was unable to stop our jump to hyperspace. I have excised the virus and am regaining control as we speak, but it is difficult.
Do you have any idea of our destination?
None, Seacott said. The jump was blind. Eventually, we will pass close enough to a gravity well to be pulled out.
I'm sorry, Tahiri sighed.
Sorry? Luke asked.
Yes.
I brought him here. I argued for it, and now everything's ruined.
Tahiri, you weren't the only one who thought it was a good idea, Corrin said. Everything always looks clearer in hindsight. He put his hand on her shoulder.
You came here for all the right reasons. To end the war. To somehow find common ground between us and the Yuuzhan Vong. I thought we could handle the situation. I was wrong.
The figure that resembled Nen Yim smiled ruefully.
I will not say I am happy to find myself sabotaged and in danger of destruction. And yet, what you brought with you, the Shaper and her knowledge, are of great importance. I do not entirely understand and will not speak of it now, but I suspect the questions raised are the most important questions I shall ever have to ask myself. Now, if you will excuse me, I must return my full attentions to preserving us all through what is to come. I suggest you find sturdy shelter in the caves.
Thank you, Luke told her. And may the Force be with you.
More than ever, Seacott said. I believe that it is.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, The Final Prophecy by Greg Keyes.